Previously.tv Podcast Network.
I said a bunch of things I didn't mean.
Then we should talk about it.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, Season 9, Episode 11, How to Be the Jerk Women Love. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah DiBundy.
I'm an idiot.
Hello.
Hi.
Let's get into it. This is so dumb. I can't wait. So starting with our C plot, Steve turns pickup artist. So David starts his terrible radio show this week in typical incel fashion, whining that he's alone and only sees couples and just asking the listenership at large for advice. And apparently Janet's not going to be offering any because she's over guys and their need for women to swoon at their shitty pickup lines. And she and Donna start comparing bad lines they've heard, which cues Noah to tell them how easy they have it in patriarchy. Clip two.
Girls have no clue how hard it is to make the first move. Most guys know they're going to get slapped.
Not.
Gina, wait up.
Donna, Dylan doesn't have the market cornered on greatness.
And you would know us how?
Well, for your information, I happen to have mastered the art of the pickup.
Don't get me wrong, you're cute. Delusional, but cute.
I'm telling you, my technique is bulletproof, and it's easily taught.
How to be the jerk women love.
Sounds like a real moneymaker to me. It does. Doesn't it?
We'll get back to the Gina and Dylan interlude in another storyline, but this leads,
unfortunately,
I know, this leads Steve to the brilliant idea of putting on a seminar, except the flyer, as you'll see in the visual aids, actually reads how to be the jerk woman love. There's also like completely random, like German style capitalization throughout,
yeah,
and like 500 fonts on this thing.
Professor Steve Sanders, eh?
Yeah. So it's called The Art of the Pickup, which is close to a decade before Neil Strauss's book on pickup artist culture called The Game came out. So let's assume that someone in the cast hung out with actual pickup artists in LA at the time. And let's assume that someone was Vincent Young, because just playing the odds.
Yeah.
Janet is disgusted. David comes in and Steve asks him to film the session so that he can sell the tapes later. And David has nothing else going on, so he agrees. And then he goes to the store to ask Kelly to come on his stupid radio show to give relationship advice, since clearly he's not qualified. This is also where he tells Kelly and Donna about Steve's seminar, which they think is hilarious and plan to sneak into. And then we see them do exactly that and watch from David's stupid booth. And here are some of the pearls of wisdom that Steve is dropping. Clip three.
Now, step four is the subliminal approach. If a girl asks about your job, don't say you're an ad man. Say you're laying the groundwork for a career in advertising. Mm-hmm. She asks about vacations. Well, we've just gotten back from Mounting Everest, from Mount Kilimanjaro.
Oh, my God.
Suggesting a movie is simple. Want to see something swell?
Don't you want to see something swell? No.
Recreation? Well, you like to play cards? How about poker? Now, if the conversation turns to sports, well, you surf. But only when it's really, really rough. When the swells are enormous.
Gross. Also stupid. Like, life is, like, this is like studs level wordplay.
I didn't even get some of them. They're so dumb.
Yeah.
That I was like, Mounting Everest? That's not a... Oh.
Uh-huh. Like, and also, like, laying the groundwork. Like, that is such a 70s phrase. Like, that's straight out of a Woody Allen movie. Laying.
Oh, I know. Wouldn't you rather sit around and rap?
Oh, my
hey,
God.
Cut the rebop.
Before we make love. So then... In part two of this presentation.
You broke me.
Sorry.
Just keep going. I'll be okay. Fine.
So we see that Steve has presumably forced Janet to co-star in a video of himself picking her up, starting with his patented eyebrow smoothing move. And here's how that goes. Clip four.
Hi.
I'm waiting for someone.
It's okay. You mind if I order a drink?
Suit yourself.
What kind of liquor is that?
Well, it's a Long Island iced tea.
Long Island iced tea. That reminds me of when I was a boy. My grandmother made the best iced tea. Excuse me.
Oh, no, please. Steve, tell me.
You should be ashamed of yourself, Steve.
Yeah, ashamed all the way to the bank. Cha-ching.
She was making iced tea last time I saw her. Before they took her to the hospital. Before I went to the orphanage.
I don't know which would be worse, falling for one of these lines or actually using them.
You poor thing. Come here.
Okay. Any questions?
Is your grandmother, is she okay?
She's fine.
Protect this sweet and tender soul at all costs. Sir, you do not belong here.
Oh.
Poor idiot. So apparently the final exam for these goons is that Steve takes them to the Peach Pit after dark to get them to hit on women, and the one who is worried about Steve's grandma is up first. We'll come back to him. Meanwhile, Kelly's in the booth to dispense love advice, starting with a girl whose boyfriend of a month is pressuring her to sleep with him, though she doesn't think that she's ready. This parallels Kelly's own storyline, which we'll get to in a second. Even David knows that if this guy breaks up with the caller for not sleeping with him, he's bad news. And that's coming from a non-convicted statutory rapist. So there you go. On the floor, a guy tries the "is there a mirror in your pocket" line and gets slapped in the face. A second guy tries with a blonde who's not interested. And the sensitive guy manages to get this far. Clip five.
Hi.
Hi.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that's us confronting these episodes every week.
Seriously.
Bye.
If only. So the next day, Steve's gone over to David's to yell at him for getting Kelly on the mic with her go slow advice. I guess blaming her for all of his guys striking out. David then gets shut down by a blonde at the club and looks enviously at Noah on the dance floor getting a Barbie hand scalp massage from Donna. You see the visual aids.
For like a week and a half. Oh my God.
Yeah. So he asks Steve if he even remembers being in a normal relationship. Steve claims he does, vaguely. And then a cute girl sits down with David. Steve urges him to try the dead grandma shtick on her, and she immediately excuses herself, but he guesses it's a Long Island iced tea that she wants, and you know what that means. And after a brief cut to Steve trying to rally the troops, we're back with David, fake crying as the girl comforts him, and she ends up hugging him while he privately smirks at how he totally hoodwinked her, because he's definitely learned really a lot from his old experience of two episodes ago. Barf. Pause for ad. On to the B plot. Kelly's in a quandary about boning Matt. So she's come over to the otherwise empty Walsh house for dinner made by Matt. They end up loitering at the bottom of the stairs before starting to kiss. And then he kind of presumptuously takes her hand and starts to go up, but she doesn't move. And he apologizes, but she says it's not about him. It's weird being there with someone who's not Brandon. Almost like you should widen your dating pool, maybe. To people who don't live in this house, but whatever. He offers to make coffee instead, and she does this. Clip six.
You hate me, don't you?
Kelly, I don't hate you. I just thought that, I'm gonna make us some coffee.
Trolling cheerfully acknowledged. I hate you.
Yeah. Like, what does she expect to gain from putting him in that position? Like, yeah. What if he says, I mean, I do, kind of. Anyway.
Yeah, really.
So Kelly later goes to see Matt. at the house and walks in on a cooking lesson that he's getting from some broad named Marissa. They have to keep their voices down because there's a souffle in the oven and Kelly gets all pinched and jealous of the souffle. Just kidding. So Matt is broke, but he has discretionary money to spend on dance lessons, as we saw in the last one, and cooking lessons, apparently. But maybe this teacher's giving him a break on her fees because they met on a blind date that didn't go anywhere except that he still wanted to learn how to cook. Kelly continues being weird as she says she's going to leave. But first, Matt tells her he really wishes that she'd stayed the night before. And Kelly makes a bitchy face to no one, which you can see in the visual aids. And there's no fallen souffle payoff. What a waste of souffle stuff. It's like this isn't a TV show or something. But we do get stuff the next day with Kelly failing to dress a mannequin properly because she's watching women go up to Matt's office and seething. But at the same time, she thinks it's her fault if he's moved on because she wouldn't fuck him. And Donna thinks Matt's a great guy and that Kelly shouldn't let him go. And Steve's shitty seminar, having included a roundtable discussion with Matt and Noah, Kelly then sees Matt say his seduction technique in this video involves dinner at home and whatever else he's been doing with her. And Kelly pouts that maybe she's not actually that special if this is just his whole routine. So the next day she goes to see Matt in his office and confront him about all the broads who've been coming in and out. But the women Kelly's been seeing are probably on their way to the second floor nail salon next door. Terrible location for a nail salon, by the way. But then she says she also saw the video and that now she doesn't feel special knowing he was using a technique, a game, as it were. But her resolve starts to crumble as he starts kissing her hands and they end up making out. And when they run into each other at the club again, he wants to know how serious she is in her take it slow love advice because he had a whole romantic night plan for them. But her advice only applies to people just getting to know each other. Long story short, she wants to fuck him now, which they then go to her place and do. And the next day, Kelly drives him back to the club to get his car, and she's all twitchy and weird, and gives him a super quick peck when he goes in for a kiss. He declines breakfast, and then she has to reiterate her ghost low advice again. She definitely wants him to call her, but she wants them to do his relationship right. He's with it. And when she goes by later that night, she explains her manner, saying she was nervous and insecure, and in terms of dinner, he was thinking they'd just order in, lest she think he had a whole plan. And now Kelly's absolutely ready to fuck a new guy in Brandon's old room. Hooray, she's cured.
Yeah. The Zero Chemistry Club has now convened to hate each other nakedly. Great. Who cares?
On to the A-plot. Gina and Dylan mess with their most hated relatives. So Dylan and Gina have progressed to making out across a table at the club and doing a bit where she introduces herself to him. And it's when she's pulled his coat over her shoulders because she's chilly. You know how cold clubs are. That she finds a little baggie of drugs in his pocket and shows it to him. And he says he can explain it, but she's not interested. That's what we heard in the C-plot where he was running after her. But then apparently she also went home with him because he comes out the next morning to where she's sitting on the front step having left and come back. Sarah, you clipped this for the visual aids. Do you want to discuss this?
I just, generally speaking, we've had this conversation many times where it's like they fade up on like two people after a disagreement the next day. And it's clear that like they had some like sulky set to in a car and then drove to one of their houses, brushed their teeth, went to sleep, got up, and now over coffee, they're prepared to fight about it again.
Right.
Like this happens on this show fucking it's not just the show, but constantly, like, why are people storming out of places? And then the fight resumes like after what would have required a car trip of at least 20 minutes because it's Los Angeles. If you're going to storm out, stay out.
Yeah.
Or just have the fight then. Like, put a commercial in the middle of it. Fine. But, ugh, it's so annoying.
Yeah, it's real dumb.
Also, so it's Dylan.
Yeah, true. She doesn't want to date a guy who does drugs, and he doesn't bother denying that he does, instead asking if she would prefer if he were in a band. She doesn't think it's funny and stands like she's going to leave, but he wants to show her something first. And he claims that part of him is glad that she found it and then flushes what I guess we're supposed to think is his entire supply, claiming that he's giving up something he never should have started and that her finding it is the best thing that ever happened to him. Do you want to talk about the flushing too?
Yeah. Like, talk about a magical toilet. At least when he was flushing all of David's gazillion drugs down the toilet, he didn't flush the baggie, but he flushes the glassine in this time, which is like, oh, well, it's nice that all the money that you're now saving on heroin, you'll be able to spend on a snake to get that thing out of your pipes. Shithead.
And so even though Gina's whole thing is that we're supposed to think she's street smart, she buys that this is like all the drugs he has.
And also that's the end of it with a narcotic.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So Gina then comes home breathlessly saying to the Beach apartment, saying how bad the traffic is between Dylan's and their apartment. And Donna has to rush Kelly out of the house before Kelly can be a bitch about it. And as soon as she's gone, Donna opens the topic of what she overheard Gina saying at her birthday party and what they haven't talked about since. Again, to your point, this was like days ago.
And they live together.
And they live together. Mm-hmm. So Gina insists that she was just in a mood that night, but she doesn't have a problem with Donna. She didn't mean it. And she has to go now because she has a new job as a personal trainer. Her client is Felice. And at the session, Gina is, I guess we're supposed to think, not easy on Felice, who says her goal of fitting into a size 6 is not exactly Olympian. And she admires Gina for getting as far as she did in the Olympics and wishes that Donna would show the same kind of commitment to something. Gina cracks up that Donna has her own store, but Felice just thinks that's for now. Next year, it'll probably be something else. You know what? Fair point.
That was good Donna shade from Felice. Mm-hmm. And I love that Gina sort of gently interrupts it by, like, Felice is stretching and Gina's like, less bounce. I just thought that was funny.
Felice also hopes that there will be a new boyfriend in a year. And Gina thinks that Donna and Noah seem attached. And Felice gets her to spill that Donna and Noah practically live together. Felice thinks that Donna picks dudes who will annoy her. And Gina schemes with a tiny eyebrow pop. Hey, what year is this again? Clip 7.
Well, you saw that dress I want to get into. You think I can make it by Thursday?
Yes. What's the rush?
Well, I've been invited to a luncheon given by George Magazine. John Kennedy is going to be hosting.
Absolutely everyone is going to be there.
I have 2 tickets. I was going to invite Donna.
You know what? That's so weird that you're saying that, because I think Donna was just reading about that luncheon in the paper. Yeah, she said that you'd sacrifice your firstborn to be there.
I don't know why I bother sometimes. She'd only go kicking and screaming. Why don't I take you instead? It would be lovely to sit there with somebody who would actually like to be there.
Yeah? Okay.
I mean, okay, like, I understand that Donna is a dumb baby that Felice gets frustrated with, but this is the wrong brand of dumb baby.
Yeah.
Like, she would happily go to that event, if only to show off her stupid designs. That's idiotic.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, true. So somehow Donna and Gina have gotten Dylan and Noah to go to an art opening with them. Guys aside, don't believe this is something Gina or Donna would enjoy either. But anyway, Donna wants dirt on her mother, but Gina says training her was fine and that Felice worked hard, which Donna can't imagine. Gina also wedges in a reference to the John luncheon that Felice is bringing her to, and Donna's all weird that Felice just gave it to Gina. And meanwhile, in the bathroom, Dylan is obviously snorting whatever and yelling at an adorable little boy waiting to get in and pee. And outside, Donna's all pissy that Felice passed her over. And Dylan pushes his way between them to druggily interpret the painting they're looking at. And now I think he's snorting brown cocaine based on how wired he is, as we mentioned in the last episode. He's not acting like it's heroin at all. Despite what all of the synonyms, as you mentioned, the drug dealer rhymed off the first time we saw him.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It's like, it's however they want it to make him act in any given scene.
Right.
So like, it's a speedball. Like, that's not how that works either, but okay.
Right. So Donna and Noah have no interest in Dylan's interpretation. So he goes over to Gina and says he'll buy her whichever ones she wants, whether they're officially for sale or not. And Noah has known Dylan for 3 whole episodes, so he thinks he can tell when Dylan is out of control. But Gina does have a favorite painting, and it's on loan from the collection of Anthony Marchette. So Dylan takes off, and Noah, who will apparently never learn, is like, what a psycho. So once again, Donna has to explain, though what she says is that he's the guy who killed Dylan's wife and not also Dylan's wife's father.
Whatever. Yeah, I had a note about that it was like, that's a very weird, like, for new viewers note, mm-hmm. which we don't need because you give it to us in every episode, and yep. Justice for Brenda, and
yeah,
While you were talking, I have come up with a catch-all name for whatever drugs Dylan is on.
Uh-huh.
Mopioids. Thank you. I didn't quite deserve that, but I will take it.
Moving on. So Dylan wakes up groggily the next day to Gina in the corner getting dressed. He's all sweaty and achy and refuses her urgings that he see a doctor. So Gina changes the subject to Tony and how Donna told her who he is, or Anthony Marchette told her who he is. And he claims he's fine, and they do the intro gag again in clip 8.
Hi, my name's Dylan.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Gina.
Hi, Gina. You know, there was this girl here last night. She was very beautiful. Easy to be with, no hassles. Do you have any idea where she went?
Well, I think she probably disappeared because you started to do heroin again. Yeah. Are you using needles?
No.
If you're using needles, you need to tell me.
Hey, what did I just say? I said no. Okay? I'm clean. We're safe. We used condoms. I don't know what you're worried about. Is interrogation over?
Yeah, it's over. So are we.
You're really not, but nice.
No,
try.
You're really not. And also, forget about the drug use. Like, his giving you that tone, like, okay, before you leave, it hit him with the fertility idol in the face. I don't know what your problem is. Like, you weigh 118 pounds. You just don't get to talk to people like that, shithead.
So then, fucking Dylan pulls up to Tony's fucking cemetery with a bouquet of lilies sticking out of his leather jacket on a motorcycle. It's extremely embarrassing. Everything about it.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of Tony death flashbacks that I'm not mad about because they eat up time. And when he walks up to what he thinks is her grave, it's a bunch of names he doesn't know all around. And he gets mad and whips the flowers on the ground without considering that maybe he's so drug addled that he got confused about where her remains are. But
or
then,
also that if you cared that much, maybe you would have come back in the last 4 years and checked in to make sure that you had the right lot number. Mm-hmm. Shitbag.
So he fucking stomps into the mortuary to yell at the manager, whatever, about where Tony's grave is in an extremely idiotic way. Clip 9.
Where's my wife's grave?
Well, I'm sorry, what was your wife's name?
I just love that he's like marches in expecting this guy to know who he is. Like, he doesn't watch the show.
He's like, Butts? Seymour Butts? Like, fuck you.
So he first has the guy look up Antonia McKay and then Antonia Marchette, and only on the latter does he find out she's been disinterred and her family hasn't shared with her ex-cemetery where they moved her remains to.
Her
Dylan handles it well.
I'm sorry.
Dylan handles it well. Just kidding. Clip 10.
I am her family.
I see. It's very unusual.
You tell me where she is.
I told you I don't have that information.
I said tell me!
Wow, dude. He does not know.
Yeah. Also, he can't tell you.
Right. You're just some guy. Yeah. Anyway.
Google, dickhead.
So then Donna runs into Gina at the Peach Pit. She's all squirrely and tells Donna she should go to the luncheon. And Donna says that's silly since Gina already accepted the invitation. But Gina says she shouldn't have assumed that Donna had already turned Felice down. But there's more. Clip 11.
I just feel so bad because she always says so many mean things about you.
She's just overly critical. But
I just want you to know that whenever I'm with her, I always...
Did you say mean?
Yeah. The worst. I always defend you, though.
Oh my God. Like, only on Donna would this work.
Yeah. Also, why is Donna surprised that Felice is mean about her behind her back? Like,
she's mean about you to your face. Totally.
Wait, did you say mean? Yeah. Have you met your mother? She's a fucking bitch. Anyway.
Yeah, the correct next line is, okay, I thought maybe you said man, and I just wanted to clarify that we were talking about Felice, because, yeah, she's mean.
I thought you said bean, and I was like, what? She's farty? What? Anyway,
I'd watch that web series. I'm not going to lie.
Gina's on her way to another session with Felice when she finds Dylan waiting for her, and she tells him he should go, but he wants to bore her with talk of Tony's bones, basically. He also brought his own beer to drink, sadly. Don is making out with Noah on the deck when Felice comes up with Gina, dressed in a very Felice-ish frumpy suit, which you can see in the visual aids. It is fucking hideous.
Yeah.
But Gina is proud as punch to be in it. It's kind of funny. She spins as she says Felice bought her the outfit for the luncheon, and Donna's legitimately nice about it, saying John will be impressed, and Felice says, we'll let you know, in a weirdly jocular tone under the circumstances. And Gina tries to excuse herself, but Donna stops her in clip 12.
Gina, before you go, I would just like to apologize to you.
Why?
I'm just sorry that you got dragged into this.
This? What do you mean by this?
You know, I'm so excited to go to the luncheon, but I think maybe I better pass. No, don't do that. Not for me. Because no matter what, I'm not going.
Fine. Well, that makes three of us. Happy? Thank you for ruining a perfectly lovely afternoon.
See, now I feel like I've come between you two, and that's the last thing I wanted to do.
She says, a pat of butter lodged firmly and unmeltingly on the roof of her mouth.
Oh, I don't get why Felice wouldn't still go. Like, presumably she has some other old bag friends she could bring.
Yeah. Or your, like, young boyfriend, or, I don't know, your husband, who the show couldn't afford to also have on this week.
True.
Take Tony's bones. They're out and about.
Good luck finding them. Actually, if anyone could find them, Felice could.
Yes, she has connections, I'm sure.
So then Dylan approaches a drug dealer, but not about drugs, in clip 13.
Looking to score a piece.
Not my trade.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you 10 minutes, and the guy down the block gets the two bills.
Any gun in particular?
Just something that'll kill somebody.
Somebody. And also, really? Like, for all you know, that dude's a cop.
Right.
And also, really? You have a 24-inch waist. And also, really? Like, we're doing this again? Like, are you going to shoot Brandon / a puzzle made out of his parents? Please say yes. Also, really? Okay, I'm done.
Puzzle. So then David finds it the next day when it falls out of Dylan's jacket. David and Steve both storm into Dylan's room to confront him about it, because David doesn't want guns in his house. And Dylan pushes back, which is when David has to tell Dylan he shot someone last season, or should I say he was one of many people who shot people last season.
Seriously.
But Dylan promises it'll be gone the next day. Like, how about now? Like, you don't have a job. Just get up and get rid of it. Don't even have to put pants on, really. Whatever. Elsewhere, Donna and Gina compare notes on their mothers. Gina asks if Donna has heard from Felice, and Donna's like, do you mean, has she apologized? No, and she won't. I don't know what Donna thinks Felice has to apologize for, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, she was financing everything from the doodlearium to, I mean, no, there's nothing to apologize for.
Yeah. So Gina once again has to school Donna on how bad she didn't have it with Felice as a mother in clip 14.
Just be happy that you got the supportive sister as your mother.
Oh, right, versus the independent one. Do you realize that I paid my mom half of every paycheck I earned skating?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I did. You know, that's why I've always envied what you have with Aunt Felice. Then I guess I'm sorry to burst your bubble. Hey, are we okay?
Yeah.
I mean, really okay?
Well, you stood up for me to my mom. Not many people have done that.
And all for the privilege of sitting 200 yards from John Kennedy Jr.
Stupid.
Unbelievably. I'll see you later.
See ya. Hi, Aunt Felice. It's Gina. Oh, I'm good. I just called because I wanted to apologize about yesterday. Donna's behavior was really embarrassing.
Okay. I mean, Gina, really? You gotta try to bag bigger game. I'm just saying.
Honestly. This is very easy. So anyway, Gina goes over to offer Dylan her support, but he's flustered and has to leave to take care of something and won't tell her what. And she gets pissy about his secrecy, so he admits he's going to see Tony's father and find out where Tony's bones ended up. And with his back to her, he takes the gun out of his jacket pocket and puts it back again, stupidly. Like, you couldn't tell from the weight of the jacket when you picked it up that the gun was still in there? Whatever. Gina thought that Tony Sr. didn't want Dylan to know where Tony's remains were, and Dylan says he didn't, but Dylan's gonna change his mind. Dun, dun, dun! That's where we leave it for this week. Let's name our episode MVP. Tony Sr. for fucking with Dylan.
Yeah, I'm with that. I will give an honorable mention to cemetery research flunky. He's yeah. Like, what's your wife's name?
Yeah.
And then hopefully when he pissed himself, got some on Dylan.
All right, least valuable player. Dylan with the veiny screaming.
Ew. Matt for caring about Kelly.
Fair. All right, we have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
At NickWho12 on Twitter asks us to list 5 inanimate objects from this episode with which Kelly had better chemistry than she did with Matt. She wasn't really in a lot of scenes that Matt wasn't in, possibly. Oh, wait, she was in the booth. So let's say CDs in David's booth.
The red lipstick she put on in the booth and made a big show of putting on in the booth and then did not have on, even like kissed off in the next scene. So I guess you could say she also had better chemistry with continuity than she did with Matt, which is to say not.
The mannequin she was trying to dress.
Noah? Does that count?
Glass of the booth.
Yes, that makes 5.
Although, which she stared through, much as she stares through Matt most of the time. All right, we also have a Kim challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways from this episode, Dylan proved he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, he's riding around with loose flowers, which is just bad.
He's in possession of an illegal firearm. Bad, dangerous.
Dangerous to keep a child from access to a bathroom because you're doing drugs in it.
Dangerous to artwork, which you're leaning on practically and flailing near at a museum.
And it's bad to yell at some poor guy who's just trying to get through the day at the cemetery. Leave the man alone.
Well, really. Will Luke Perry, teen heartthrob, leave us alone? Not today. We are continuing with Luke's time in soap operas. After a year, his contract on Loving ran out. The producers took Ned Bates off the show. Mr. Bates. According to Luke, his last scene as Ned Bates was uneventful. In the scene, Luke's character went upstairs to wash his hands. That was the last anyone saw of Ned. Once again, Luke was unemployed. He went to more auditions. NBC TV cast him as Kenny on Another World, another soap opera. Luke worked on that soap on and off for 6 months. Then he modeled for a blue jeans ad. The job disappointed him, though, because he couldn't keep any of the jeans. Well, probably because they had to make them custom for your waspish waist. Luke even tried out for a part on the NBC show Ferris Bueller with no success. Interesting. He had small parts in the movies Terminal Bliss and Scorchers. In Scorchers, he played Ray Ray LaPew. His
what?
Character was a crazy, dirty, drunk trapper.
Name of my sex tape. A lot.
Luke admitted that he loved the role. Despite his best efforts, Luke didn't get any more good acting roles. He decided to move back to Hollywood. He thought his chances for finding jobs were better out west. He was right. 2 months after he returned to the West Coast, his agent told him about a new Fox TV show, Class of Beverly Hills. Dun, dun, dun! Spoiler, I don't think he gets the job.
What?
Just kidding. But that's it for today's reading from Luke Perry, Teen Heartthrob.
Good one.
Next time on Again With This, Steve gets sued, Dylan gets arrested, Kelly gets neurotic, Donna and Noah get laid despite stuff, and your hosts get so goddamn bored by non-sweeps ninth season episodes, we ordered cardiac paddles from Amazon. You should throw some Alka-Seltzer in your cart before attempting our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This, which you can find on our website at previously.tv. Follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv and follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Controversial Souffle, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Money Back Guarantee, Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, as always, is George Magazine Event Coordinator, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.